This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal.
Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
What is the most surreal, this can't be real moment you've ever experienced? Story one, delivering pizzas in my 20s. I knocked on a door and realized after knocking that I was at the wrong address. Let's say it was 9th Street Southwest instead of 9th Street Northwest. So I was exactly on the other side of town from where I needed to be. As the guy opened the door, I was about to say, "Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to disturb you. Have a nice day," like I usually do when it's the wrong address. But the guy didn't look confused and was already holding money, ready to go. Turns out he had ordered pizza and accidentally put his address in wrong, which means I was accidentally at the right place. Our two mistakes perfectly canceled each other out. To this day, I wonder about the actual odds of that happening. It feels like it's way more than one in a million. Story two, I wasn't even looking up when I was in the passenger seat during a head-on collision. All I know is a big bang happened, and when I looked up, there was a red metal wall on fire. I looked to the right of me and saw open street with debris all over the road. Still, none of this made sense. I had no idea where I was or why blood was pouring out of my face into my hands. I kept trying to figure out what the burning red wall was. Then I looked to my right again, and a young blonde woman was screaming into a phone. I was still trying to understand why there was a red wall. Then I saw a fireman, and he manhandled me a lot. I was jostled around and asked a bunch of questions, something about my age. I was loaded onto a gurney, and as I was wheeled away, I saw the whole smashed car. Suddenly, I realized I had been in an accident, and the red wall was the hood of the car smashed up vertically, and the battery was on fire. None of it made sense at all until I saw the whole car. Story 3. Hotel cleaning staff came back to the front desk complaining that they couldn't clean a room due to the alligator in the bathtub. At first, I thought I was misunderstanding something. I wasn't. There was literally a decent-sized alligator in the bathtub, about 3 feet long, which in my mind wasn't big enough to kill you, but definitely big enough that I didn't want anyone going back in there. Turns out he was the animal guy for a magic show. The even bigger shock came when he got back from the set that day and asked why his room hadn't been cleaned. He told us to our faces that there were no animals in his room, now or ever. He held that line through an increasingly baffling and angry conversation, so confidently that even I started to doubt reality itself. This continued throughout his weeks-long stay. Housekeeping resorted to taking pictures of whatever strange exotic animal he had in there, and he still denied it. At one point, he started saying his assistant had been in the room all day, so it was perfectly safe. But no one was ever there. He'd get practically foaming at the mouth angry over it, which was typical. But the bizarre thing was this repeated insistence that the room was safe, no animals. And then there'd be a capuchin monkey loose in the room. Story 4. I texted my mom asking if she wanted me to pick up food for us on my way home from work. I had been a huge jerk to her in the morning before I left and felt bad. And my dad replied 30 minutes later, "Mom's gone. She passed. The ambulance is here. She died unexpectedly. She was there at 9 a.m. when I was huffing at her to get out of the bathroom so I could take a shower and go to work. And then she was dead an hour before my shift ended. I remember walking in a daze and running straight into my boss, just choking up. I don't remember driving home or what was said when I got there. She was inside under a cloth, and all I could see were her feet sticking up. I kept thinking this had to be a joke or a bad dream. She was only 54, I was 23. I hadn't expected to lose a parent at all, much less on a random Tuesday in October. It still feels surreal, to be honest. Her death, planning her funeral, driving up to Toronto to pick up a casket, the entire year after her death. But the scariest part is that I don't remember what she sounded like or what she looked like anymore. She hated having her picture taken, and I think my way of coping with the sudden trauma was to forget what it was like living with her. My entire childhood, teen years, and early adulthood just feel like I'm watching a movie about someone else when she was alive. Grief is strange, and explaining that this world is ending for me, but everyone else is going to work and paying bills feeling is so hard. Story 5. Years ago, I used to do side jobs for extra money, painting, handyman work, building decks, etc. I had a side job painting a water tower, about 30 feet tall and probably 10 feet in diameter. I had a buddy and his son helping, getting them a little extra money too. So we're out there on a Sunday morning. It's spring, and North Texas weather in spring is crazy. You can legitimately have all four seasons in a day. It was a little warm, sunny, but you could see a dark cloud in the distance. The wind starts picking up, gets a little cool, a few raindrops fall, then we start getting gusts. I try to finish this small section, hoping the rain doesn't ruin it. Now it's really windy, and I'm about 15 feet in the air on a ladder, so I start trying to go down. Whoosh! A giant gust hits me. The ladder was briefly airborne. It was an extra-wide extension ladder, so I was able to turn around on it, thinking I might jump off. As it tipped over, I was basically running down it. My weight, the angle, the speed of the fall, everything was timed perfectly. I literally ran down a ladder and got to the bottom as it hit the ground. My buddy's son said something like, "That was some movie-level stuff." I'm a marginally athletic, average-sized white guy, nothing special, and I was in my early 30s, way past any reflex prime. It was just luck. In another universe, I fell off and broke my neck, but that day physics was on my side. Story 6. I'm a defense attorney. Last year, I second-chaired a week-long murder trial. I handled the expert witnesses, directing hours and cross-examining the government's experts. My coworker took point on opening, closing, and lay witnesses. We thought we had a very strong case, and my coworker did a great job, especially in the closing argument. Without going too deep into the details, it was a bar fight that went wrong. A guy came barging into a crowd heavily intoxicated, pushing people and yelling slurs. One thing led to another, and he ended up in a fight with a whole crowd outside the bar. Estimates were between 10 to 30 people involved. My client, a tall, heavy-set black woman, was accused of kicking the victim in the head while he was down. They were trying to claim that as the cause of death. Only two people claimed to see my client do that, and they were sisters from a family known for criminal history. One of them, a young white woman, was caught on tape bragging about kicking the guy 3 times in the head and even mimicked doing it. We put her on the stand and got her to admit that she lied and lied and lied to the police. We also had a witness staying in an apartment above the street who heard the commotion, looked out the window, and saw what she said was a short white man kicking the guy after the fight. She assumed it had to be a man because she said no woman could be that vicious. The jury deliberated for hours. Finally, around 9 p.m., the verdict came back: guilty on all counts. My client kept chanting, "No, no, no, no." Her mom was sobbing in the gallery behind me. My co-counsel was devastated. He looked up at me, and I've never seen him look like that before or since. He had absolutely nothing left, but we weren't done yet. With a guilty verdict, we now had to proceed to sentencing and let the jury decide how many years she'd serve. I had never done that before. Hadn't even seen that phase of a trial. He asked me to take over and handle the witnesses and closing argument. One look at him and I knew, even though I had no idea what I was doing, I was in better shape to do it than he was. But wait, there was an error in the verdict. The clerk and judge discovered it, so the jury had to go back and deliberate again. Maybe it was a mistake. Maybe they meant not guilty or guilty on a lesser charge. For another 30 to 40 minutes, they went back to the jury room. Once again, they came back. Once again, they confirmed it: guilty on all counts as charged. So my client and her family had to hear the same devastating news twice in 1 hour. Somehow, even though every fiber of my being was screaming that it was a nightmare and I needed to wake up, and I felt like I was going to pass out from the heat and stress, I held it together. I gave a closing argument off the top of my head with no preparation. It was after 10:30 p.m. We were all exhausted. I just spoke from the heart and leaned on the amazing stories her family shared about her. The jury came back with the minimum sentence on the murder charge. That was the only real victory we had in the whole mess. But I'll never forget that night. I've never had to physically resist the urge to run away like that. It felt like that moment in a bad dream when you realize something terrible is about to happen. But instead of waking up, it just kept going. And it kept getting worse. I'll go to my grave knowing that woman was wronged. Story 7. Assisting an organ donation and witnessing the moment when a young woman's heart was lifted out of her chest, walked across the OR, carefully packed into a transport chamber, and then carried at a sprint out of the room. Until that point in the harvest, it hadn't sunk in for me that the patient was deceased because she was a DBD, donation after brain death. So she was warm to the touch and under anesthesia monitoring. Once the heart was out, we packed her chest cavity with ice and continued harvest.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The kidneys, spleen, and vessels. The anesthesia provider removed her breathing tube and left the OR. I remember feeling a chill and a weird slow motion moment as her heart was lifted out. It felt like I was witnessing something sacred. The OR team was notified later that week that her organs had saved 6 lives. While I don't know how those patients are doing now, I hope that heart is still beating somewhere. Story 8. My elderly neighbor came over and asked, "Want to see something?" I said, "Yeah," and she told me to grab my keys. It was already late at night, but I just shrugged, grabbed my keys, and met her at my car. She gave me directions to a farm with a fenced-in area that had about 80 to 100 cows. We stood outside the fence, and she kept looking at her watch. At this point, I was sure I was going to get murdered. But what happened next? I still can't explain it. One by one, all 80 to 100 cows knelt down. They stayed that way for maybe a solid minute or two, then just got up and started roaming around like normal again. She got back in the car, and after I picked up my jaw, I got in, and we drove home silently. When we pulled in, I asked her what the heck I had just seen. She made the motion of zipping her lips and throwing away the key. I went back to the farm several times alone and never saw anything out of the ordinary. I even spoke to an employee of the property and probably looked like a complete lunatic asking the questions I was asking. She refused to acknowledge anything. This was over 25 years ago. I still think about it. Story 9. In 2010 or 2011, my wife and I were driving back from a pro tennis tournament in Miami to our home in Lakeland, between Tampa and Orlando. The tournament ended late, so we decided to make the 4-hour trip starting around midnight. We were taking rural Route 27, which goes through a lot of small towns that are notorious for speed traps. The speed limit back then went from 55 down to 35 right as you entered each town. My radar detector would go off right at the speed limit sign for about 75% of the towns we went through. It was ridiculous. In one town, I don't remember which, there was only one stoplight, which turned yellow right as I approached it. I would have had to speed to beat the red light, but I was suspicious, and sure enough, I got hit with radar. It was strange because there was no other traffic to trigger the light. I looked around and spotted the cop parked behind one of the nearby buildings. So I'm sitting at the red light, waiting for it to turn yellow the other way, and it never did. It went from green to red, then straight back to green in my direction. The officer had been controlling the light remotely. I had thought that the initial yellow light was too perfectly timed, and then seeing it skip yellow in the other direction confirmed it. It's a story 10. When my country experienced a massive earthquake that took lives, I had a newborn and a 3-year-old at the time, and was alone at my parents' house when the quake hit. My dad had a lot of old carpentry tools, bricks, and other heavy items along the shelves in the lounge above me. They all fell during the violent shaking. I was thrown off my chair onto the floor. My daughter was in her bouncer beneath me, and I crawled over to pull my son from the other side of the room where he had been playing with his cars. As soon as the ground settled, I picked up my son, carried the bouncer, and ran out into the street. Alarms were going off, people were running, cars were speeding, just chaos everywhere. Oddly, one man walked past me nonchalantly reading a book as if nothing had happened. My neighbor took me into her undamaged house until my mom came running up the street. We waited there for several hours until my dad got home from work. Traffic was horrific, for obvious reasons, to assess the house for structural damage. He was a builder. The house was still habitable, but was declared a total loss through insurance. The most surreal part was that my dad had taken a photo of the lounge later that afternoon after the quake. The spot where I had been sitting was covered in tools that had fallen onto the chair. If the quake hadn't thrown me off, I would have been seriously hurt, or worse. My daughter's bouncer had a perfect clear circle where nothing had landed, and my son had also been in a clear spot with no debris. Every other part of the floor had something heavy on it. We were incredibly fortunate. After that, my dad never stored anything dangerous on the shelves again. Story 11. I was with my then fiance, now wife, Christmas shopping on November 20th, 2005. We went to Suncoast trying to think of gift ideas. We left, and just as we were about to round the corner, my wife suddenly stopped us and said she just thought of getting Friends season DVDs for a friend. So we turned around and walked back into Suncoast, and seconds later, a mass shooting began. We were walking directly toward where the shooter opened fire, so we would have been right in front of him when he began if we hadn't turned back. I'll never forget the sound of the echoes as the gunshots rang out and people screamed. Pretty sure as I ran back to help some elderly shoppers frozen in place, I saw people getting hit. I had just run into a coworker minutes before the attack. He saw much more than I did and was deeply affected by it. He was this big trucker guy who always acted tough. I saw him after he came back to work, and he started crying when I asked if he was okay. We got locked in the Suncoast for a while, listening to the gunfire and screams, while a promo film played and Christmas music echoed in the background. It was eerie. At first, I thought it might be a gang incident, since mass shootings weren't as common back then. But as the shots kept going and people screamed, we realized we were trapped. We yelled at the Suncoast employees to let us out the back. I think we left just as hostages were being taken at the nearby Sam Goody. We were filing out the back as police cars surrounded us, with more arriving. Outside, people were crying, screaming. It was chaos. We missed it by seconds, all because of some friends' DVDs. Story 12. Where I live, there is a castle just down the road. The lord of the area still lives there. He's a bit younger than me, and our sons attended the local state primary school together and became friends. I became friends with his dad. He's a normal guy, just happens to know who his ancestors were for 800 years. He gets invited to a lot of events and was invited to take part in a local regatta, in a rowing race. There would be him, the invitee, and he needed two more rowers. It was a paired relay. He asked me if I would do it. I said I would, but explained that I sail but don't really row. That was fine. It was just for fun. Another rower was found. We were to row the first leg together. The other rower and I only met on the evening of the race, and it wasn't until we were on the water that I realized he was taking this seriously. Bless him, he soon had to temper his expectations when he saw how bad I was. He made no fuss at the change in approach, but coached me along. We came in last for the changeover. It turned out that this guy was a gold medalist in the British Rowing Championships. The second leg didn't go any better. Our other pair were also very amateur, and we were competing with, obviously, seasoned rowers. We were last by a long way. We stayed for the presentation of cups. The Lord Mayor of the town was presenting these. By chance, his wife had previously been my teaching assistant, and there was a cup for the first boat that entered from a local town, not the town where the regatta was. There was only one boat from there, us. So there I was, with a Lord of the Realm, a British gold medalist, and a local historian. Being presented with a cup, despite coming dead last, by the wife of the Lord Mayor, who had previously been my teaching assistant. For rowing, my first time in about 20 years. Not my usual day. Story 13. I once took about 150 micrograms of LSD on the beach late around 2 in the morning. I was chilling, relaxing on a sand dune, feeling the warm ocean breeze and being one with the universe, when suddenly about 30 people all came onto the beach together, not 100 feet away from me. They each had one of those $200 lightsabers, the really nice ones that leave color trails in the air, and they started having an all-out lightsaber brawl right there. They were running around, making big elaborate maneuvers and yelling catchphrases, and just generally whacking their friends with glee. It lasted for over an hour before they packed it in, an hour of lights and colors. I was awestruck. There was no way they could see me. It was very dark, and I was tucked into the reeds on my dune, like it was a show for my singular enjoyment. They must have been part of a Star Wars club at the local university, and they'll never know there was a witness to their performance. But I will forever be grateful. Story 14. My mom left my dad shortly after I was born, for very legitimate reasons. My mom knew of a son he had from a previous relationship, and she knew both the son's and his mother's name. She's always been transparent about the whole situation, and when I was about 27, I finally wanted to talk about it. So she was excited to show me a picture she had kept all this time. A picture of the son, my half-brother, age about 2 or 3 in the photo. Excited as she was that I finally opened up, she tried to find him by Googling his first name plus his mother's first name. Usually that's not how you find people. But this time it popped right up. World-famous artist, raised by his single mother. The moment at 5 a.m. when my mom called me and told me that she'd found him and who he was so surreal. We checked the photos, the interviews, the background. It all checked out. He's refused to get in contact, which hurt, honestly. But I managed to find another sibling, not famous this time, with whom I have such warm contact. I often wonder how many undiscovered siblings I have. Story 15. My experience happened in a very niche online gaming clan centered around a specific political group. Because of how narrow the community was, there were only about 20 to 30 active members at the time. A good friend of mine in the clan was from Finland, and he'd often joke that no other Finn would ever join since others who played the game didn't usually share his views. So we were really excited one day when someone new joined, from Finland. A few days later, the three of us went on a boss-killing run together. We were in a voice call when suddenly both of them made startled noises. I asked what that was about, and they said it was lightning. I thought it was strange that I hadn't heard anything through my headset, which would suggest they were both near the same lightning strike. That's when they started asking each other questions. What city? Oh, wow, me too. What district? And they kept going, getting more specific, until finally they realized they weren't just in the same city or even on the same floor of a building. They were literally next-door neighbors. They had no idea. They had never met. They joined the same tiny corner of the internet and happened to discover each other like that. because of a lightning strike during a video game raid, unreal. Story 16. When I canceled my wedding, the whole thing felt like I was in a movie. I had spent most of the previous evening wrapped in anger, and the next morning when I acted on it, I was still consumed by that emotion. But the anger became like a cocoon between me and the outside world. I called the vendors. I called my family. I posted a neutral announcement on social media that the wedding was not happening. I did the things. I made the calls. I wrote the posts. But I felt like someone else was doing it all. I remember my ex pleading with me at one point not to go through with the cancellation. But I was calm inside the storm. I presented her with what felt like a stone wall. It was surreal, that sense of detachment. Even now, nearly a decade later, I remember less of the actual details and more of the feeling that I had become a spectator to my own life. That day still feels like a dream I watched happen rather than something I lived. Story 17. Okay, so this didn't happen to me. It happened to an old school friend from Wigan who I'm still in touch with. I asked her to post this herself, but she didn't want to, so I'm sharing it here. Back in the late 1980s, there was a school trip being organized. In those days, if it was an expensive trip, you'd get a paying-in book. You'd bring your payment installments to the teacher, who would take the money and sign the book. Now, my friend is incredibly honest and not the type to make up stories. She has a distinctive, but not unique surname, and her name was written on the front of her paying-in book. It was one of those small notebooks issued by the government stationery supplier at the time, Banner. The trip came and went, and afterward, the book was tossed in the trash and forgotten. Fast forward a few decades, and her mom, who's a teacher in Liverpool, was presented with a notebook by one of her students. The student had brought it in because it had the same unusual surname as my friend and her mom. Apparently, they had been renovating their home, and behind the old fireplace, hidden in the chimney space, they found the book. Upon close examination, it turned out to be the exact same paying-in book from the 1980s school trip. It had somehow survived all those years, tucked behind a fireplace, and made its way back into the hands of the family who first owned it. Story 18. My encounter with a drunk, poisoned, chemically altered hawk. I was camping in a little patch of trees between some farms in Nebraska, and late at night, I decided to go exploring and check out the stream running through the nearby trees. I got partway there and suddenly came face to face with a large hawk, hanging by its talons from a branch. It was alive and aware, watching me approach. I just stood there, stunned, then ran back to camp to grab my camera. I returned, took a few photos, and then it suddenly dropped and very clumsily flew to a new branch, this time upright. It repeated this a few more times, always awkwardly, sometimes struggling to stay balanced on the branches. My best guess is that it had eaten a poison rodent from one of the nearby farms. It wasn't enough to kill it, just enough to get it seriously disoriented. It was surreal, eerie, and oddly sad to watch such a majestic animal behave like that. Story 19. My poor mom has never had a birthday party for herself. So for her 50th, we were throwing a huge surprise party. Friends were coming from other countries and other parts of our country. Everything went smoothly, and she had no clue anything was going on. While I was getting ready, my brother called me, which was odd because he never calls me. He was crying. I had no idea what was happening. He told me our grandfather, my dad's dad, had passed away, and the police were trying to access his house. It turned out he had choked on a ham sandwich the night before. The man had survived cancer multiple times, and he passed away from choking on a sandwich. He was found literally an hour before the party was supposed to start. We had to cancel the party, sadly, so my poor mom didn't get her celebration, and my dad had to bury his father. It was so bizarre and surreal. To this day, I still replay it in my head like a movie montage, going from such a high to such a low in an instant. And as if that wasn't enough, it made it into the national newspaper once the coroner's report came out. Honestly, my grandfather probably would have found it hilarious that his passing made the news because of a ham sandwich. Story 20. I have a few, and I'm not the best writer, so I apologize in advance. But I'll share my top three. When I was 16 and living in a small town in Kansas, my parents had gone out for the night. I had gone to the county fair and then out to eat with friends before coming home to an empty house. That wasn't unusual. My parents were kind of partiers, but this time felt different. Every light in the house was on, which wasn't normal, and I felt incredibly uneasy. This was before cell phones, so I couldn't just check in. I did what I usually did and went to bed. In the middle of the night, I woke up to my grandmother standing over me, telling me to get up and get dressed. I was shocked. She had never been in my room before. She calmly said, "You need to hurry. Get dressed and come downstairs." I did as she asked, grabbed my shoes, and went down. As I reached the landing, I saw a reflection of a police officer in the window. When I turned the corner, my grandmother stepped out of the kitchen and said, "Your mom and Jim were in a wreck. Jim died." She reached out like she was going to hug me, but I was so numb I just sat down and put on my shoes. I couldn't process it. It turned out they had slipped off the road into a field and weren't found for about 5 hours. Both were alive when found, but in critical condition. My dad died as they reached the nearest ER. My mom had to be taken to a trauma center. Her back was broken in 6 places, her neck as well. Her ribs had punctured her organs, and she lost her spleen. That night completely changed my life. My second experience was during my junior year at an English-style boarding school in Texas. One day before class, my legs started itching and burning while sitting at my dorm desk. Fire ants had come up through the brick floor. I had an allergic reaction and passed out outside the nurse's residence. I was taken to the hospital and given shots. For a few nights, I roomed with another student in case of further complications. After they fixed the floor, I returned to my dorm. But my house parents were still nervous. One night during a check-in, the dean, also my house parent, realized I was breathing rapidly and wheezing. He screamed for his wife. I vaguely heard yelling. It felt like a dream. When they pulled back my blankets, I was covered in fire ants like something out of a horror movie. That's when I stopped breathing. They rushed me to the hospital. I wasn't breathing, and my heart was out of rhythm. They had to defibrillate me. It was surreal to go to bed feeling fine and wake up sore, unable to breathe, hooked up to machines, surrounded by medical staff. I literally died because of fire ants. My third story happened when my daughter woke me up to say my boyfriend had collapsed on the stairs. I ran downstairs and could tell immediately he wasn't breathing and had no pulse. I was in shock but quickly called 911, put the phone on the speaker, adjusted his head, and began CPR. What made it even more surreal was that the first officer on scene just stood behind me for several minutes, doing nothing. He was on his radio and didn't assist. Dispatch finally told him to administer Narcan, since the cause wasn't clear. Even then, he handed me the Narcan and told me to do it. I had been doing CPR for over 25 minutes, in nothing but a nightgown, with zero help. When the ambulance arrived, I rushed upstairs to put on pants, even though they told me not to. The paramedics didn't even begin CPR, assuming he was gone. They loaded him into the ambulance and gave another dose of Narcan, which was their protocol, and somehow he suddenly took a breath and scared the nurse. It was absolutely insane. Story 21. For me, it was the day we found out my mom had cancer. I got a call from the hospital while I was at work. They left a voicemail saying my mom had passed out while she was at work. She worked at the hospital and asked if I could come there. I left work and headed to the hospital, thinking she probably just forgot to eat and that the hot, humid weather had gotten to her. When I arrived, they broke the news almost immediately. They had seen a tumor on an image of her lungs, and the fainting spell had actually been an epileptic seizure, meaning the cancer had likely already spread to her brain. We all just sat there, my mom, me, and my brother. We didn't even really react at first. Later, after coming home, I cried so long and so hard that it felt like it would never stop. That moment they told me felt absurd and surreal. I genuinely thought I must have misheard them. It didn't feel real. It was like time froze when they spoke. For the next few days, I kept getting hit with waves of shock whenever the memory resurfaced. She passed away 10 months later, and the thought that my mom is gone, no longer part of this world, still feels just as surreal and unbelievable as the moment they first told us she was sick. Story 22. I was walking down a dirt road, trying to understand an Iraqi police officer's broken English. Suddenly, the air vanished. Something flew past him, tearing his clothes and blowing his hair back. I realized we were both moving, and the silence wasn't silence. It was all the sounds in the world at once. After that, it became a blur of choking, bright flashes, and blinding pain. We had been hit by a Condat. EOD hadn't given the usual 2-minute warning. I was escorting the officer to the bunker. My protective vest saved my life. Shrapnel had gone through his chest, and we both fell into a fish pond. He drowned almost instantly. Two more IPs behind us died as well. The last clear image I ever saw out of my left eye was the look of shock on his face. That moment plays back in my mind like a scene from a movie. Something I watched, not something I lived through. Being almost completely blind and deaf on one side is a constant reminder that it was real. Story 23. I went to my local Chinese takeaway to grab some food. I walked in and saw a wild-looking Scottish guy in some sort of standoff with the terrified older man who runs the place. It seemed like the guy had pressured him into calling a taxi and was now accusing him of lying and actually calling the police. The poor man was clearly just trying to get the guy to leave. I stepped in and tried to calm things down. The guy shifted his focus to me. I don't remember everything he said, but at one point he threw me a pouch of tobacco and told me to make him a cigarette. While I was rolling it, he started ranting about how he had just escaped from the local prison, a notoriously rough one, and was paranoid. He asked if I knew how to deal with police dogs. I said no. He replied, "You wait for them to get close, then grab their back legs and tear them apart." He started smoking the cigarette right there in the takeaway and continued talking about his violent past. Eventually, a taxi pulled up and he sprinted into it. I had been in there for 30 minutes babysitting this guy and hadn't even ordered yet. What annoyed me most? The takeaway owner didn't even say thank you. He just took my order like nothing had happened. Not even a free bag of prawn crackers. Story 24. We had a patient who had shown signs of suicidal thoughts, so we transferred him to the secure ward after finding a note. He was scheduled to return later that day to collect his belongings. After speaking with us, he seemed more stable, so we didn't expect any issues. My colleagues and I stepped out for a smoke. Since all the terraces were full, we went into the garden. I thought I saw a hedgehog and wandered into the bushes. That's when I saw the patient walking down a secluded path, about 200 meters away. Something in my gut didn't sit right. I asked a colleague to come with me. As we walked through the bushes, that feeling grew stronger. We found him at the very last moment. He was just about to end his life in the most hidden corner of the compound. We talked him down and accompanied him back to the secure ward. Once it was over, we just stood there thinking, there's no way that was real. So many things had to align for us to find him in time. It felt like fate stepped in. Story 25. It was around 2001, and I had just finished a long, frustrating shift working as a server at TGI Fridays. All I wanted was to sit down, relax, and eat in front of the TV. My roommate had already downed a six-pack of Bud Light when I got home and was working on his seventh. He was drunk and wanted to chat, but I was exhausted. He started poking and teasing me. I wasn't having it. In a moment of anger, I grabbed the plastic ring of the remaining five beers and slammed them onto the floor. But when I did, one of the cans launched behind me into the front doorway and hit the wall. We both instantly calmed down at the sound, laughed it off, and made peace. Later, he told me to check out what I'd done to the wall. I found bits of drywall all over the floor, and the beer can was swollen but hadn't burst open. Here's where it gets weird. I went to patch the hole and started pulling out the broken wall pieces. That's when I noticed something metallic inside. Using pliers, I pulled out an old 1980s Shasta can. Someone had previously made a hole in that exact spot and used a soda can as filler behind the drywall to support plaster. What are the odds? A beer can makes a hole in the wall and lands in the same spot someone decades earlier had patched using a soda can. Story 26. I work at a clinic and always used to keep a water bottle there. It was bright orange, had a tapered, rounded end, and I always left it in the same spot. It never moved. One day, I come in, and it's gone. I thought that was pretty weird. I gently looked around, thinking maybe the cleaners had moved it, but they'd never moved it before, so why would they now? I asked everyone in the clinic if they'd seen it. It would be hard to miss, but no one had. Around lunchtime, I started to lose it. The mystery was driving me crazy. We called the cleaner, and he said he didn't see it and hadn't touched it. Then around 1 or 2 p.m., my coworker Kay said she found it. It was stashed with a bunch of loose tools and instruments, completely slick on the outside. We wiped it down and noticed little brown spots on it. That's when we also saw that one of the Vaseline tubs had been scooped out, as if someone had taken three full fingerfuls like a little kid digging into it. My coworker Jay called the cleaner again and asked one more time if he was sure he hadn't seen it. He insisted he hadn't. Jay then casually mentioned, Okay, I just wanted to ask before we check the camera footage to see what happened. There are no cameras in the back, but he didn't know that. The cleaner suddenly got nervous. You have cameras back there? And started stumbling over his words. He said he'd compensate us and that he was sorry. About 30 to 45 minutes after the call ended, he showed up with $50 in cash, offering it as compensation for the water bottle. Ever since then, I don't keep a water bottle at the clinic anymore. You never know when someone might get a little too comfortable with your stuff. Story 27. I heard a massive rumble on September 27, 2024. I looked outside and saw our neighbor's tree had fallen over from hurricane-force winds. I went into the basement and was shocked to see daylight coming through. The entire wall supporting our house had collapsed, and it was raining inside. Fearing for our safety, my wife grabbed our corgi and we fled, hoping to reach the town's designated safe spot. But on the 1 mile drive toward the shelter, which was across the river, we saw the water had risen dozens of feet. The bridge was completely submerged. So we headed east into town, trying to find another shelter. But we weren't the only ones scrambling. Almost every road was blocked by massive fallen trees. At that point, we lost cell service and decided to return home. After hours of navigating inaccessible roads, we finally climbed back into our damaged house in the dark. We huddled together on the half of the house that was still intact, holding each other and hoping the rest wouldn't collapse on top of us. Story 28. In the early 2000s, I was messaging a friend named Mike on AIM. He had a very unique last name, and so do I. We'd been chatting for months, having brief conversations like, "See you at Pete's this weekend," or "Going to Sarah's thing next week," or "See you at the BBQ." We were making plans and everything seemed normal. One day I made a reference to his friend Crawfee, and suddenly he had no idea what I was talking about. Crawfee was Mike's best friend, so I thought Mike was joking around. I kept asking questions and he kept getting more annoyed. I was confused why he was pretending not to know his own friend. After about half an hour of back and forth, we realized something unbelievable. We didn't know each other at all. Even though we'd been chatting on AIM for over a year making weekend plans, we were total strangers. Turns out this Mike lived 1,000 miles away and was friends with someone who happened to share my very rare name. When I originally added him on AIM, I had mistyped one letter in my real friend's email address, and this Mike's email happened to be almost identical. What made it even weirder was that our lives were similar enough that we never noticed anything was off. Even though I lived in a major city and he was in North Dakota, we never questioned it. My last name is so rare that everyone in the U.S. with it is descended from the same four people who immigrated here in the early 1900s. So I must be distantly related to the guy that other Mike was friends with. It was eerie, so uncanny it actually upset me. We never messaged each other again. Years later, I got some emails from another one of his friends saying, "Dude, how long have you been living in Australia? I just bumped into you last week." He had Googled my name and found me instead of his friend. Story 29. My wife and I did a safari in Uganda for our honeymoon. While we were approaching our lodge in Kibale, where we'd do chimp trekking and see a lot of monkeys on a primate walk over the next couple of days, we were talking with our guide about forest elephants and how rare it is to actually spot one. I'm an animal person, so I know a lot about more obscure animals like forest elephants. But a lot of this was new to my wife. She loves animals, but she's not a nerd about them. We talked about how their tusks curve inward to help them navigate narrow spaces between trees and move through dense forests. And then, right on cue, a forest elephant pokes his head through the trees. We stop immediately. He does that thoughtful, cautious hesitation thing elephants do, swings his foot forward and pauses. As this is happening, a car zooms past us between our vehicle and the elephant. "Slow down, man," is all I could think. Then the elephant just calmly strolls in front of us and disappears into the woods on the other side. We also saw leopards and hyenas, which definitely aren't guaranteed sightings in Uganda. And I'm pretty sure we saw every species of monkey the country has, too. Story 30. I was at a dorm for a summer program when the fire alarm went off in the middle of the night. I headed outside to the meeting place shown on the dorm's evacuation map, but no one else was there, which was weird because the dorm was fully occupied. I figured I must be dreaming, so I went back inside. But no, the alarm was way too loud to be a dream. I double-checked the evac spot on the map taped to my door, then went back out again, Still no one there. Now I'm thinking I must be hallucinating. I go back in again, but the alarm has stopped and the lights are still flashing. It's definitely real. Finally, I run into one other person who's also confused. They had gone to a different meeting spot shown on their door's map, and no one was there either. We compared the maps and decided to try one more time. Turns out everyone had gathered at a spot on the opposite side of the building, one that wasn't shown on either of our evacuation maps. Who forgets to include the actual meeting place on a fire safety map? The most embarrassing part? My dad was a firefighter, and I ignored all my early training and walked back into a building with an active fire alarm just because I didn't see anyone else outside. How lame is that? Story 31. We stopped the car during a rainstorm because my friend spotted a little old lady lying on the sidewalk. She had slipped and fallen. She was soaked, scared, but thankfully unhurt. I helped her into the car and offered to drive her home, and she started giving me directions. I swear, as we passed the local graveyard, she suddenly said, "Wait, you just drove past?" I backed up, and sure enough, she told me to drive through the cemetery gates. I glanced at my friend, who was now in the back seat, and she had that exact, "this can't be real" look on her face. It was surreal, but I drove through. Thankfully, this wasn't the beginning of some cliche horror story. The lady was the caretaker's mother, and they lived in a little house way in the back. Her whole family had been worried sick because she'd been out when the rain started. She forgot some flowers on the seat, and as I called out to return them, my friend couldn't resist. In her best spooky whisper, she said, "Leave them on my grave." Story 32. When I was younger, I went to a concert in Auckland, and like any responsible idiot, bought some party pills from the local corner store. They were legal back then. BZP-filled little rockets promising euphoria somewhere between ecstasy and a Red Bull overdose. My mates and I took half a pack each, felt nothing, then naturally decided more was the answer. 10 minutes later, boom, high as satellites. We danced like lunatics and had a great time. Around 5 a.m., the comedown arrived with insomnia in tow. I couldn't sleep, so I went for a walk. A few hours later, sitting on a park bench tripping out, I started seeing rainbow birds in Disney-style castles. Then I spotted an elephant in the bushes, just standing there, trunk swinging, like it had business to attend to. I thought I was losing it, until it casually disappeared into the trees. This can't be real, I thought. Back at the hotel, I told the guys and they cracked up, blaming the pills. But later that day, we saw the news. An elephant had escaped the zoo and was hiding exactly where I'd been. Turns out I wasn't hallucinating. I just accidentally out-tripped animal control. Story 33. About 35 years ago, I was doing shipping and receiving for a golf and bowling supply company in Northeast Indiana. It was a beautiful day, sunny and 75, so we had the big garage door open. No loading dock, but the door was that size. I'm just minding my own business when something catches my eye, and I see a monkey, maybe a couple feet tall and 10 pounds, casually walking across the floor towards some shelves in the back. It looked straight at me, and all I could do was yell, "Monkey!" I was so surprised. I went up front to the owner's office and told him there was a monkey in the back climbing the shelves where we kept the 15 and 16-pound bowling balls. He told me to stop messing around and get back to work. I told him he could keep my paycheck if I was lying. Plus, the guys printing t-shirts saw it too. He comes back and asks me where it came from. I told him it walked in through the door and didn't stop to answer when I asked. Then I reminded him the Fort Wayne Zoo was less than a mile away. We called the zoo, and that's when they discovered they were missing a monkey. Animal control came and got it, and I walked away with a story no one ever believes. Story 34. My engagement ring has a pretty spiky raised stone. I had a habit of fidgeting with it and rubbing it. I was at work in a busy cafe setup. I touched my ring and felt an empty socket. Complete panic. The building is very old with crooked floors and gaps between the floorboards. I frantically ran around looking for it. I remembered I'd been in the toilet earlier, so I went in there and waited at the door since it was occupied. Got on all fours and scanned the floor. It wasn't there. Got out again, told my colleagues, and we started searching more. About half an hour later, I remembered hearing a noise, like something dropping, when I pulled up my pants in the restroom. I went back in, pulled everything off the floor around me, and then I looked in the toilet. There was something in it, right at the bottom. My hand dove straight in and, OMG, it was my diamond. How did it survive 5 to 10 customers visiting the loo? Lucky me, no one had flushed anything serious. Since it was heavy, it just sat at the bottom while the toilet paper and water flushed away. Story 35. When I was 12, I woke up in the middle of the night needing to use the bathroom. I reached out for the light switch on the wall and jabbed my fingers into something solid, specifically into what felt like the chest of someone standing there. I looked up and saw what was undeniably a gray alien, but it didn't look exactly like the ones you usually see depicted. It had smaller eyes with large pupils, but not the full black look. A smaller head, a flat nose with just two holes, thin lips. It was strange. I immediately hid under my blanket. I never heard or felt anything after that. I just laid there, terrified, for what felt like forever. Eventually, I peeked out, and it was gone. I'm a natural skeptic, and none of it makes sense. In hindsight, I've told myself it must have been my dad messing with me. But I never asked him about it, and he passed away 19 years ago. That bugs me more than anything. People talk about strange encounters all the time, but they usually fall into three categories. People making things up for attention, people who were under the influence or dealing with mental health issues, and credible people who experienced something they just can't explain. If what I saw was real, I don't think it was some alien from outer space. It was just there. I physically touched it. I felt skin and bone. And then it just vanished without a sound. I heard absolutely nothing. I've accepted I'll probably never get an answer. It's something I just have to live with. Story 36. My husband and kids had already moved to our new duty station, and I was still waiting for medical approval to join them. During that time, I was staying at campgrounds and living in my car. One day, feeling the weight of everything, I decided to go on a little adventure. I'd always wanted to see our Arcosanti in Arizona, but visits were by reservation only. I sent an email, even though tours required 24 hours notice, and figured I probably wouldn't hear back. So I decided to drive towards Sedona instead and take in the sights. Just as I reached the fork in the road between Sedona and Arcosanti, I got a call. Someone from the village said it was fine for me to come and that they'd give me a tour. So I changed course and headed there after all. It was amazing. I even took a small hike around the area afterward. Then I decided to go a bit out of the way to eat at a restaurant owned by my favorite musician. While there, I overheard the staff saying they were closing early because the owner's band was playing their final Arizona show, and they were all going. I checked online, completely sold out, even the nosebleeds. I figured maybe I'd drive near the venue and try to listen from the car. I didn't have much else going on. On the way, I stopped at a beautiful viewpoint between two desert mountains to take a photo. The person in the car next to me made some polite small talk. We chatted briefly, and during that time, I used a lesser-known lyric from one of the band's songs to describe the view. He caught it immediately, and we started talking more about the band. Turns out he had two extra tickets because his friends bailed last minute. He offered one to me for a third of the price. And just like that, on a total whim, I got to see an incredible sold-out show. Something I thought was completely out of reach. Everything had to line up perfectly for that to happen. It felt like one of those rare gifts from the universe. One of the most serendipitous and meaningful days of my life. Story 37. I traveled about 200 kilometers by public transport to the start of a trail. And when we got off the bus in a small town, I saw a man, from behind, who resembled my ex. I didn't pay much attention at first because I subconsciously thought, nah, that's not possible. A few minutes later, I saw the same man again about 50 meters ahead of me. This time I noticed the woman he was with and realized it was actually him. The posture, height, almost 1.90 meters, the shape of his bald head, facial expressions, glasses, everything. And the woman? Undoubtedly his current girlfriend. Her hair, her clothing, her overall vibe. I wasn't furious or anything, but I wasn't exactly thrilled either. It was clear they planned to hike the same trail. As we were catching up to them near a restaurant, I mentally braced myself for their stunned faces. I was getting close. They both turned around and looked in my direction, and the stunned face was mine. They weren't them. But barely not them. Only the tiniest differences in their faces set them apart. They were almost exact copies. I was completely flabbergasted. To this day, I still don't know what else to make of it, except that maybe I really am living in a simulation. Story 38. I was driving to a bar for Halloween night a couple of years ago, and we witnessed a horrible car accident unfold right in front of us. A car was rear-ended by someone speeding and ended up flipped, four wheels in the air, on the opposite side of the road. I immediately pulled over and called for an ambulance. We stayed until help arrived. Stuff happens, we thought, and we went to the bar anyway. About 45 minutes later, still shaken and talking about how lucky we were that it wasn't us, we decided to head to one of my friend's apartments. The mood was just off. I'm not joking. At the very first roundabout after leaving the bar, we saw another car come speeding in, miss the turn completely, and launch straight off into the air, landing about 30 meters into a nearby business, which was luckily closed. Again, we stopped and called for emergency services. We waited until they arrived, then finally made our way to the apartment. It's been almost 4 years, and it still feels like a dream. I'd never witnessed a serious accident before, and then I saw two of the worst ones back to back within about 75 minutes. I even made screenshots of my emergency calls that night, but I can't find them anymore. As far as I know, everyone survived that night, at least until the ambulances arrived. Story 39. The year was 2017, and the Washer Me Too movement was in full swing when I got a call from my supervisor telling me I was being reassigned and placed under investigation. No further explanation was given. A week later, my new supervisor called and told me I needed to drive 3 hours to headquarters to answer some questions about my time at X location. When I arrived, I was brought into a room with him and two others who never spoke. He started asking bizarre questions, almost like lines from a bad B-movie. I denied all of it. That's when he put his glasses down and got to the point. "We've received disturbing reports from your previous location, specifically alleging inappropriate behavior toward female colleagues. You're denying everything, and that's fine. But in this climate, we've had to make administrative changes to prevent further problems." I never got to face my accuser, but I figured out who it was. She ended up getting the position I had been groomed for. I was transferred, sidelined, and within a year I was stuck in a low-level role. That's when I left. I should have spoken to a lawyer, but I genuinely believed the truth would come out on its own. It didn't. I quit, did lawn care for a while, then stayed home after my son was born. Eventually, out of a need for justice, I applied to law school. I'm set to take the bar exam this July. Story 40. It was August around dusk, and I had just finished washing my car in a cul-de-sac in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. As I walked up the driveway, I noticed a large shadow moving along the ground and up the side of my house. Naturally, I looked up. What I saw was a large black creature, roughly 6 to 8 feet long, with wings. I was so close I could see the veins in its wings. It had two short, thick legs like tree trunks, no tail, and a head shaped like a horse's snout. It glided silently without flapping for about 5 seconds before disappearing over the roof. Trying to process what I'd seen, I immediately ran inside and grabbed my girlfriend, who was making dinner. We both ran out the back door. There were woods behind the house, but whatever it was gone. I never called the police. I only told a few close friends. I worked for the government and had a TS, top secret clearance, so I kept quiet. A few months later, I was out of state flipping through TV channels in a hotel when I landed on...
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip: when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts. Like, last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
One of those cryptid shows. A man was describing the Jersey Devil, and when they showed a sketch, I froze. I'm not from New Jersey and had never heard of it before that moment. That experience changed my perspective on a few things. Story 41. One time when my mom was driving me home from work because my car was in for repairs, I got a phone call from a number I didn't recognize. I answered, and the woman on the line said she was calling from the credit union. Apparently, they had a monthly draw, and this month, the top two winners were getting a free brand new car, and I was one of them. It sounded like a scam until she started reading off my name, address, and other personal details. She didn't ask me to give her any information. She just asked me to confirm what they already had. That made it feel way more legit. And it was legit. I got the car and sold it almost immediately. That sale gave a big boost to my savings and helped me move into my own place. Meanwhile, my sister, on the total opposite end of the car luck spectrum, was still recovering from being hit by a car not even a month earlier. For the record, she made a full recovery. Wild timing, though. Story 42. When I was 18, I worked night shifts as a patient transporter at a hospital. One part of the job involved transporting the deceased to the morgue. These runs were usually done during the quietest hours. After visiting hours, when most of the staff had gone home, and the halls had that eerie liminal feeling that made everything feel like it was filmed on VHS under buzzing fluorescent lights. One night, another transporter and I got the call. The body was already zipped up in the bag. Still, peaceful. We started wheeling it through the empty corridors when we suddenly heard something, a soft moan, low and breathy, coming from the body bag. Then, no joke, the corpse's arms started rising inside the bag, slow, stiff, like it was about to unzip itself and ask for a glass of water. I looked at my coworker. He looked at me. Neither of us said a word. We just kept pushing, pretending we hadn't just stepped into the opening scene of a horror film. Later, we learned it was something called the Lazarus reflex, a post-mortem neuromuscular response where the arms can involuntarily rise or twitch after death. Totally normal, totally terrifying. Basically, the body's last way of saying, here's one more jump scare for the road. Story 43. I got lost on the Appalachian Trail once with my son and husband. The darkness is something you have to experience, or I guess not see to believe. Your eyes don't adjust to it. It's literally pitch black. A planned 4-hour hike turned into an 8-hour ordeal that ended in total darkness with rain pouring down. We didn't tell our son we were lost, so to him, it was just an adventure. He thought it was a blast. By the time we finally made it out, my phone was at 2% battery from using the flashlight. I barely had enough signal to send 2 texts to my brother asking for help before completely losing service for the rest of the time we were out there. We had no food and just 1 water bottle each. I remember feeling cold from the wet clothes, but because we kept walking, our bodies stayed warm. This was in November in Georgia. At one point, we saw strange claw-like marks on a tree. My husband told me it was a beaver. Once we got back to the car and were safe, he admitted it was actually a bear, and he just didn't want to scare me. I was terrified we'd be stuck out there all night. Without our phone flashlights, we couldn't even see our hands in front of us. Story 44. My partner and I were returning from a cruise flying out of San Juan, Puerto Rico on Memorial Day weekend in 2017. Our plane broke down multiple times. They tried flying in a replacement part, but long story short, they couldn't fix it. Everyone had to be put up in hotels overnight. There's a hotel connected to the airport, and most passengers from our flight were sent there. But 3 couples, including us, didn't get a room before it sold out. Because it was Memorial Day weekend, every hotel near St. John's was booked solid. The only available rooms were penthouse suites at high-end resorts. As luck would have it, my partner and I were given a penthouse suite at the El San Juan Hotel, all on Delta's dime. That same night, the hotel was hosting an open bar black tie event in the lobby for its grand reopening, and all guests were invited. Since we had just come off a cruise, we actually had formal evening wear with us. What started as an annoying travel delay turned into a surprise night in a luxury suite and a glamorous evening affair, free drinks, fancy outfits and all, at no cost to us.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.